Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. The number of people infected with a rare type of fungal meningitis has now climbed to 119. 11 people have died, according to the latest numbers from officials at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
The infections trace back to a contaminated steroid manufactured and distributed by the Framingham-based New England Compounding Center. As many as 13,000 people in 23 states received the injectable steroid to treat back pain, though health officials do not know how many of the shots could be tainted with the fungal meningitis.
The company, NECC, has now voluntarily recalled all of its products. This is not the first time the company's it's not the first quality control crisis facing NECC. In 2002, the FDA and the Massachusetts Board of Pharmacy investigated NECC and had three prior complaints against it, including a separate investigation involving the potency of a product used in eye surgery procedures.
And yet, the New England Compounding Center seems to have fallen into a regulatory black hole that might have contributed to this latest outbreak. Joining us now with more is Sheldon Bradshaw. He is a partner at the law firm of Hunton & Williams, where he co-chairs the firm's food and drug practice group. And from 2005 to 2007, Bradshaw served as chief counsel at the Food and Drug Administration. He joins us from Washington. Mr. Bradshaw, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Meghna.
So first, let's start with a little bit of background here, because apparently compounding pharmacies or compounding centers really started as these small mom-and-pop shops that would tailor-mix hard-to-find or custom-ordered medications for local doctors and their patients. But how did they go from that to being, you know, 7,500 major manufacturers across the country?
Well, that's a good question. You know, back in 1938, when the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act was first enacted, most drugs were actually compounded by pharmacies. There were very few drug manufacturers at the time. And so this is a very old and legitimate practice when pharmacists are engaged in this traditional practice. But the FDA has made it clear that the traditional practice only involves situations where a pharmacist, pursuant to a valid prescription, mixes or alters or combines ingredients to form a unique medication that's not otherwise commercially available to meet the specific needs of an individual patient. So traditional pharmacy compounding is really done on a very low scale without much volume, because a pharmacist is responding to a doctor's prescription for a unique medication that isn't commercially available. Mm. For example, when an elderly patient has difficulty swallowing the FDA-approved tablet, or a pediatric patient can't find the FDA-approved product isn't palatable. These are situations where a doctor will ask the pharmacist to make a unique medication that they can take.
Well, let me jump in there and ask you, though, because how did we get from that and to the situation where, or actually let me, my real question is, what does it mean then that here we have a situation where the NECC is not just making specific drugs for individual patients? I mean, we've been reading that they're able to ship 17,000 vials of this steroid across the country. That doesn't sound like tailor-made for one person.
No, it's not. And in fact, the FDA would absolutely not view this practice as the practice of pharmacy. They're engaged in the practice of drug manufacturing. And there's an important distinction. The FDA doesn't regulate the practice of pharmacy. That's regulated by state pharmacy boards. But drug manufacturing is regulated by the FDA. And the FDA takes the position in a compliance policy guide that it issued in 2002 that if a company steps outside the parameters of traditional pharmacy compounding and steps into the world of drug manufacturing, that they will be regulated by the FDA's drug manufacturers.
Is that line clear, though, at what point they become drug manufacturers? Because my understanding is that it's not, and that's where this black hole of regulation emerges.
Well, to the extent there's any gray area between when you first sort of slightly step out of traditional pharmacy compounding into the world of drug manufacturing, companies like the New England Compounding Center are so far into drug manufacturing that wherever one places that line, they're on the drug manufacturing line. Now, again, in thinking about that line, though, think about that definition of traditional pharmacy compounding. You know, is this being driven by a doctor's prescription for the needs of a specific patient? So is it being driven by the doctor down, or is this driven by the pharmacy up? Here we have these large entities under the guise of pharmacy compounding are actually manufacturing significant large volumes of products that they're giving proprietary names to and that they're hiring a sales force to go out and market. Well, those are the characteristics of a drug manufacturer.
Mr. Bradshaw, if I may, before I run out of too much time, I guess the question that I have still outstanding in my mind is, as you note, the small mom-and-pop pharmacists are regulated by the state. Drug manufacturers, however, receive federal oversight through the FDA. I mean, we've been reading, and you know about these cases as well as I do, that, for example, in May of this year, a Florida compounding pharmacy was investigated for the illnesses of 33 patients who contracted a fungal eye infection. Even earlier, there was a testimony given on Capitol Hill about this unregulated industry flourishing within our own borders that sells substandard products throughout the United States. That was Sarah Sellers, executive director of the Center for Pharmaceutical Safety, who said that. So yeah. What's preventing the FDA from just stepping in and saying, yes, you will be watched over by us?
Well, there are a number of factors that one has to look at. A lot of this results from the fact that the FDA simply doesn't have the time and resources and manpower to go after every pharmacy compounding operation in the country. And the FDA has made it clear in its compliance policy guides that manufacturing knockoff versions of FDA-approved products is unlawful. And the FDA could take action today against these pharmacies. And in fact, these are criminal violations of the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. They could go after these pharmacies under and charge them criminally. The problem is that the FDA has not had the ability to do that, in part because of decisions made by this administration a year and a half ago related to the drug McKenna, which was manufactured by KV Pharmaceuticals. This is a drug product that was approved last year by the FDA for women who've had a past instance of preterm labor.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the product is widely compounded by pharmacies. And when KV went to the FDA and asked them to take an enforcement action, the FDA was instructed that it could not by the White House.
Well, there's much more to get into that regarding how the FDA does or doesn't regulate compounders, and we'll continue to cover this as the days go by. But Sheldon Bradshaw, former chief counsel for the U.S. Food and Drug Administration between 2005 and 2007, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you for having me.